Chapter 14. The Verdict. In the jury room, they were ready to do what they'd been dreaming about all month. They took their places and stared at the empty seat at the end of the table, the one that Herman had occupied.
"Guess we need a new foreman," said Jerry.
"And I think it should be Nicholas,"
Millie added quickly. There wasn't any doubt about who the new foreman would be. No one else wanted the job, and Nicholas seemed to know as much about the trial as the lawyers. Nicholas started.
"Judge Harkin wants us to consider all the evidence, including the reports, before we start voting," he said.
"I'm ready to vote now," said Lonnie Shaver.
"Not so fast," said Nicholas. "This is a very complicated case, and it would be wrong to rush things."
"We are not going to read all that stuff, are we?"
asked Sylvia.
"I have an idea," said Nicholas. "We'll each take a report, read it fast, and then make a summary for everyone else."
They started work.
Marley's flight from Biloxi to Georgetown Grand Cayman took 90 minutes. She went through customs with a new passport, which showed her to be Lane McRoland, a Canadian. She took a taxi to the Royal Swiss Trust Bank. The tropical air was warm, but Marley hardly noticed. She was greeted by a receptionist, and within minutes had met a young man named Marcus. They'd spoken many times on the phone. The money had arrived, he told her. In his office, a secretary brought coffee, and Marley ordered a sandwich. Pinex shares were still strong when Marley made her first trade. She sold 50,000 shares in Pinex at $79, using a system which was popular with experienced investors. If the price of shares was going to fall, trading rules allowed them to be sold first at the higher price, then purchased later at the lower one. With $10 million in cash, Marley would be allowed to sell approximately $20 million worth of shares. Later, she'd buy them back, and if their price had fallen, she'd make a profit on the difference in price. Marcus confirmed the trade, and Marley then sold shares in two other Big Four companies, and then more in Pinex. She paused and instructed Marcus to watch Pinex closely. She'd just sold 110,000 shares and was worried about the effect on Wall Street.
"I think it's safe now," said Marcus, who'd been watching the share price closely for 2 weeks.
"Sell 50,000 more,"
she said without hesitation. She was very calm.
Marcus's heart missed a beat, then he completed the trade.
"That's approximately $22 million, Ms. McRoland. I think we should stop. More sales will need approval from my superior. One question. When do you anticipate movement on these shares?"
"Tomorrow, early. If you want your other clients to think you're really smart, then you should suggest that they follow my example."
Marcus sent for a company car to take Marley to her hotel. Marley's present seemed under control, but her past was being discovered. At the University of Missouri, records were found of a Dr. Evelyn Y. Brandt. She'd died in 1987, age 56, and left everything to her daughter Gabrielle, age 21. Gabrielle had received nearly $200,000. On the death certificate, it stated that Dr. Brandt had died of lung cancer. By the time Fitch was told this, they knew more. Dr. Brandt's husband, Dr. Peter Brandt, had died in 1981 at the age of 52, leaving everything to his dear wife Evelyn and his daughter Gabrielle. He'd also died of lung cancer. Fitch took the telephone call from Swanson alone, with the door locked. At first, he was too shocked to react. Both of Marley's parents had died of lung cancer? He wrote it down on a yellow pad as if he could analyze it, as if he could somehow make it fit in with her promise to deliver a verdict. He closed his eyes and rubbed his head. He must stay calm. There was nothing he could do to stop the jury's discussions. They were in there with deputies by the door. Fitch made a list of possible things he could do.
all of which would be dangerous, illegal, and would fail. He slowly rose to his feet and took the glass lamp in both hands. Conrad and Pang were standing outside and heard a crash as the lamp hit the wall. Fitch shouted something about the money. Then the desk hit the wall.
"Find the girl!" he screamed. "Find the girl!"
After the period of forced concentration, Nicholas decided that some debate was needed. He started by summarizing a report on the state of Jacob Wood's lungs. His audience was bored.
"I have an idea," Ricky Coleman said. "Let's see if we can all agree that cigarettes cause lung cancer."
"Fine with me," said Nicholas. "Raise your hands if you believe that cigarettes cause lung cancer." 12 hands went up in the air. "Who thinks nicotine is addictive?" Another yes vote. "Let's keep united, folks," Nicholas said. "It's really important that we walk out of here voting the same way." Most of the jurors had heard him say this before. The legal reasons weren't clear, but they believed him anyway. They continued to work through the reports. They left the room to smoke and to stretch. Lou Dell and two deputies guarded the door. After another juror had summarized a report on the contents of cigarette smoke, Lonnie Shaver spoke.
"I thought we decided that cigarette smoke was harmful." He looked at Nicholas. "I say we get on with the voting. I'll go first."
He took a deep breath, and everyone turned to watch him.
"My position is easy. I believe cigarettes kill. That's why I leave them alone. Nobody can force you to smoke, but if you do, you'll suffer the consequences. Don't smoke for 30 years and then expect me to make you rich. These crazy lawsuits need to be stopped."
"Do you know when I started smoking?"
said Angel Weiss.
"I remember the exact day. I was 13, and I saw this really good-looking guy, all smiles, perfect teeth, with a beautiful girl on his arm, and a cigarette in one hand. What great fun, I thought. That's the good life. So I went home, got my money, and bought a pack of cigarettes. Don't try and tell me anyone can give up. I'm addicted."
Lonnie said nothing. The arguments continued, then the jury returned to their reading. At 5 o'clock, Judge Harkin called them back.
"You've had the case for 5 hours. I'd like to know if you're making progress."
Nicholas stood up. "I think so, Your Honor. We're determined to finish and have a verdict sometime tonight."
"Wonderful. Thank you. Dinner is on the way. I'll be in my chambers if you need me."
Dinner was over at 6:30, and the jury agreed to vote. "Are you willing to hold Pinex responsible for the death of Jacob Wood?" asked Nicholas. 4 jurors voted yes, 4 no, the rest weren't sure.
"I think it's time for you to say what you think," Lonnie said to Nicholas.
"Okay," he said.
He'd practiced this speech and spoke very persuasively. "I'm certain that cigarettes are dangerous. They kill 400,000 people a year, and they're full of nicotine. I think cigarettes killed Jacob Wood, and I am also certain that tobacco companies lie and cheat and do everything in their power to persuade kids to smoke. They are selfish and greedy and should be punished."
Ricky Coleman and Millie Dupree felt like clapping.
"You want punitive damages?" asked Jerry.
"The verdict means nothing if it's not significant. It has to be huge." They went round the table again. 7 for the plaintiff, 3 for the defense.
"How much money do you have in mind for Celeste Wood?"
asked Ricky.
$1 billion.
Mouths fell open.
"That's ridiculous," said Lonnie.
At that moment, most of the other jurors agreed. The discussions continued. Finally, they agreed 10-2 that Celeste Wood should receive $2 million in actual damages. After the mention of $1 billion, $2 million seemed a very small amount. Again, they voted 10-2 for punitive damages. "Any idea of how much?" asked Nicholas.
"I have an idea," said Jerry. "Get everyone to write down their amounts on a piece of paper, then add them up and divide by 10. That way we'll see what the average is."
The jurors quickly wrote their numbers on pieces of paper. Nicholas slowly unfolded each piece of paper and called the numbers out to Millie, who wrote them down. 1 billion, 1 million, 50 million, 10 million, 1 billion, 1 million, 5 million, 500 million, 1 billion, and 2 million. Millie did the math.
"The average is 356,900,000.
Lonnie jumped to his feet.
"You're crazy,"
he said, and left the room, banging the door behind him. Another juror looked shocked.
"I can't do this. I'm retired, okay? I have enough money, but I can't understand these figures."
"These numbers are real," Nicholas said, "and the company is very rich. It has $800 million in cash. We've got to think big or they won't take any notice."
"What will happen to the tobacco industry if we bring back a big verdict like this?"
asked Angel.
"There'll be a lot of action. The industry will have to examine their advertising plans again. They'll go to the government and demand special laws. But I suspect they'll get less and less help."
"The industry will never be the same," Nicholas answered.
"We need to decide on an amount, folks, if we want to go home."
"I have an idea," said Jerry. "Let's take it up to 400 million, half their cash."
"Count the votes," said Nicholas.
9 hands went up. He filled in the verdict form and made everyone sign it. Lonnie returned.
"We've come to a verdict, Lonnie."
"What a surprise. How much?"
$2 million and $400 million. "Care to join us?"
"Hell no," answered Lonnie.
Nicholas walked to the door and asked Lou Dell to inform Judge Harkin that his jury was ready. While they waited, Lonnie whispered to Nicholas,
"Is there any way I can say that I didn't agree?"
He was more nervous than angry.
"Sure, don't worry. The judge will ask each of us if this is our verdict. When he asks you, make sure everyone knows you don't agree with it."
"Thanks."